Culbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning and welcome to the November term of court of the South Dakota Supreme Court. The court would like to welcome students from Northern State University, and I hope you find the three oral arguments this morning instructive. Enjoy the space, because next hour you'll be joined by students from Faith High School, and it will get a little cozier. But welcome. The first case for oral argument this morning is Brian Locke and Benji Locke, appellants, versus Ronald L. Gelhouse, appellee. And for the appellants, we have Mr. Ronald Parsons, an attorney from Sioux Falls, and Mr. Mark McNary, an attorney from Aberdeen. And I understand, Mr. Parsons, you'll be presenting this morning?
Yes.
All right, very well. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Roy Wise and Mr. Zachary Peterson, attorneys from Aberdeen. And I understand, Mr. Wise, you'll be presenting this morning.
Yes,
okay, very well. Then, Mr. Parsons, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, counsel. This case involves a straightforward question of law to be determined by this court de novo.
Could you just spend like a minute or two on the facts for the students?
Certainly. Brian Locke's injury occurred in front of an office building in downtown Aberdeen, and the office building was owned by Lon Gelhouse. And the building was very old. It was constructed in 1909 as a hotel, and it had office space or shops on the lower level. In order for that space to be accessible to the public, the original property owner was permitted to excavate into the sidewalk in front of the building in order to create stairwells. There's a series of four stairwells that were there originally. And the excavation benefited the property by providing access to the shops and sunlight that could shine in to the windows that were on the basement level. In about the 1950s, the city banned these types of stairwells. And so the property owner didn't fill them in. Instead, what he did was he left them in place and put metal grates that were filled with concrete over the openings that were in front of the building, over the stairwells. And what that did was leave, and the grates were about 2 inches elevated above the grade of the sidewalk. And what that did was create about a 9-foot deep subspace underneath the sidewalk connected to the building to the basement level that just remained there and was left in place there through the various owners that had this property, this building. So when the defendant, Mr. Gelhouse, purchased the building in 1984, he maintained the empty subspace above the grates. He left it there. What he did do was down in the basement over the windows, he put up some cinder blocks in order to prevent heat from escaping, but the doors were still there, so you could open, you know, them and look up and see that this subspace was still there. And over the years, these grates became weakened and deteriorated, in some places very visibly, in other places perhaps not so much. But all of them were worn. And Brian Locke, who's my client, he is a deputy sheriff in Aberdeen.
So it's uncontested that Gelhouse knew there was a hole below the grates, and it was like an 8-foot drop if the grates gave way.
Yes.
Okay.
He knew that.
So there's no question of notice or anything like that.
That's correct. He's a deputy sheriff, and the first floor of the building housed the probation office, I believe still does. And it was July 24th, 2003. Sheriff Locke walked up to the building to knock on the window to get the attention of one of the probation officers. And within a second, the grate collapsed beneath him. He went straight down. He dropped 9 feet down. He was seriously injured. He had to have elbow surgery and other medical problems. The trial court held that Brian Locke's negligence claim against Gelhouse should be thrown out on summary judgment because Gelhouse did not owe any legal duty to use ordinary care in the maintenance of these excavations that were connected to the basement of his building. Trial court's holding, we suggest, was an error of law for two reasons. First, an abutting property owner does owe, under this court's cases, a duty of ordinary care where it concerns excavations or other artificial conditions that are put into the sidewalk for the property's benefit. And second, the Aberdeen Board of Commissioners resolution in 1968, providing for downtown businesses to repave their abutting sidewalks, did not overturn this court's settled precedent or the common law in this area, and nor could any such resolution passed by a city commission possibly do so.
There's also no question, is there, that the city knew that this was there?
The city at least certainly knew the grates were there, and I guess I can't assume they knew what was underneath the grates, whether they were filled in or not, but they certainly knew the grates were there.
Okay.
I guess the record doesn't say whether they knew there was a subspace, but it wouldn't be unreasonable to assume they did. This court and the legislature established what the laws of negligence are, not the Aberdeen City Commission. The two cases, really, it's wonderful when you get a Supreme Court case where there are really only two cases that are right on point. The first is Rapid City versus First National Bank of the Black Hills. It was in 1961. And this court held that a municipality has a duty to keep its sidewalks in a reasonably safe condition for public travel. And it held that, conversely, as there is no common law duty resting upon the owner of an abutting property to keep or maintain it in repair, there's no corresponding liability to the general public. Now, if there was a period there, this case would be over and there would be no duty. But instead, in the Rapid City case, this court went on and recognized the generally recognized exception to that principle. And it said, quote, except when such owner or occupant creates or maintains an excavation or other artificial condition on the sidewalk which causes or contributes to an injury. And that's precisely what happened here. And in Rapid City, this court referred to these principles as settled law. And then in 1986, in the Zenz case, this court restated the principles that I just said and said, quote, this is the rule in South Dakota. And these principles that this court adopted are not new. We would suggest that their black letter law is reflected in the treatise provisions and the various decisions from other jurisdictions that we've provided to the court. And the defendant and the trial court, and neither of them have cited a single case to contradict those legal principles. In its first summary judgment decision, there were two. In its first summary judgment decision was a written decision. The trial court did not accept that the Rapid City and Zenz decisions were applicable to excavations such as stairwells. The summary judgment motion was denied for more discovery, and we did more discovery on exactly what the law was or the ordinances said regarding these stairwells. And so we had another summary judgment decision. And at that summary judgment hearing, the trial court made an oral ruling, which is, I think, tab 2 in our brief, the transcript. And there the trial court reversed course and said, no, I do agree, Rapid City and Zenz are the law. There is a duty regarding excavations that are made, and a budding landowner does have a duty, and so I'm changing my ruling on that. But then the trial court went on to say, but we believe, or I believe, that this 1968 resolution passed by the Aberdeen City Commission meant that the city was assuming the duty and somehow overruled the abutting owner's liability.
Mr. Parsons, it's not a matter really of them assuming the duty by virtue of the ordinance. It's really more a matter of law that the city's primarily liable if, in fact, there's a defect in the sidewalk. So, I mean, I don't think it's correct to phrase it in terms of an ordinance trying to change the law. Isn't our question what is the common law rule when the city is responsible and takes responsibility for the way in which the sidewalk was repaired?
Well, that could be the question of law. I think that's a question of law this court should address. I don't think that's the way the trial court framed its decision.
Help me right away, because that's the way I took the rationale of the trial court, is that Do you disagree with that?
Well, I think that's certainly an implication I have to address. And I do want to do that. I think what's helpful is the Home decision, which cited in the briefs, issued last year. And there, this court addressed the interrelationship between statutory schemes and common law liability regarding municipalities in relation to streets. And there, in the majority opinion, Justice Zinner, you said, well, the question regarding sidewalks is left open. And I think Justice Konecap, in your concurring opinion, also said, you know, these cases, these issues relating to sidewalks will have to wait for another case. But I would suggest this is not that case, because this case involves not a municipality's liability, but whether an abutting private property owner has any duty under the common law. And these statutes, the statutory scheme here, it's a statutory scheme that has been in place, its predecessor statutes, I think, since about 1890. And it's basically a notification process whereby if a municipality wants to have a sidewalk repaired, then it notifies the landowner, and the landowner has to repair it and at its own expense. That same statutory provision was at issue in the Rapid City decision, the 1961 decision. And there they addressed it and said, yes, this statutory system does occupy this field in terms of a sidewalk, in terms of municipalities' duty to keep its sidewalks safe, and abutting landowners' corresponding non-duty to keep sidewalks safe. But then it recognized this exception as part of that. So this court has already decided that excavations or other artificial conditions that are put into a municipal sidewalk for the property owner's benefit, that's an exception. And so that common law duty exists. And I would suggest there's nothing a city can do, or there's nothing that the legislature has done to disturb that common law, as reflected in the Rapid City decision. And it really just only makes sense. It makes a perfect logical policy choice, because the only reason these excavations are there in the municipal sidewalk are to benefit a private property owner. I mean, they're put there solely for the benefit of the building. They have to be maintained under the common law by the property owner. And that makes sense, because that's who benefits. If the court were to adopt a law saying that, you know, municipalities are responsible for all excavations or special uses or artificial conditions placed in municipal sidewalks for the benefit of private property owners, probably what you'd see is that municipalities wouldn't let anything like that happen, because they don't want to assume that type of liability. And I think the affidavits we've submitted show that the Aberdeen city attorney and city engineers understood and were relying on the fact that the Rapid City case and the Zenz case demonstrate that this special use exception has been enforced in the state of South Dakota for, you know, at least for decades.
You know, there's... Go ahead.
Was the trial court looking at an either-or liability situation as opposed to... I mean, is it either the landowner or the city, one or the other, and I'm picking the city?
I think that was the mindset, and I can't get into the trial court's mind, but if you read the decision, I think that kind of was, I have to pick one. And what the trial court said was, you know, the city assumed liability for this, and by passing the resolution, it said, we are responsible now for this from here on out. And, you know, this ordinance and this statutory scheme exists, you know, the statutory scheme applies statewide, and these type of ordinances, and all it said, really, and it's in, I think it's the last tab in the appendix to our opening brief, it just basically says, all right, property owners, it's time to repave your sidewalks again. It applied to 150 properties downtown, and use Portland cement. I mean, that's basically what it says. It's a form ordinance, and actually, if you look in the Rapid City decision from 1961, virtually an identical ordinance is listed in that decision as well. So this is an ordinance that I would speculate that every municipality in South Dakota has passed this type of ordinance at one time or another, saying, all right, repair the sidewalks, repave the sidewalks. And so if that action, as the trial court said, somehow either constitutes an assumption of duty or implicates a statutory scheme that applies everywhere, then basically the exception recognizing the Rapid City decision would be swallowed up and gone. And I don't think that's is the law or should be the law. And it's also important to remember that, you know, this is just a question of duty. This is just whether a private property owner who digs into a sidewalk and then maintains that there has any legal duty under any circumstances to the general public. Whether Mr. Gelhaus was negligent is a question for the jury. You know, whether it caused proximate damages to my client, that's a jury question, and what those damages are. This is just a legal duty question, and I would suggest it's already been answered by Rapid City and Zenz.
So really the duty, since the hole was there long before he bought the building, as you see it, the duty is to fill in the hole?
If that's necessary, yes. To use ordinary care, and the jury would determine what was reasonable under the circumstances. But we would certainly be arguing to the jury that, yeah, you can't leave these clearly deteriorating, unstable grates over a 9-foot drop abutting your building. My client's injuries are a testament to why you shouldn't do that. I mean, the thing, he stepped on it and it collapsed. And, you know, there's disputes about to the extent they were deteriorating, but clearly, I mean, the evidence is undisputed. And some points on some of these grates, you know, the concrete had completely broken through, the iron bars are sticking out, and you could, at least one place, you could see right down into the basement. And if, conversely, when Mr. Gelhaus and the person who was looking to buy the property were down in the basement, and they would look up, they could see sunlight coming down through these grates. So this was a dangerous situation. It's self-evident that it was after the fact, and the jury will decide whether that's something that Mr. Gelhaus should have prevented if our position is adopted. I also just wanted to point out that the treatises and the cases we cited demonstrate that a private property owner can't release itself of its legal duty by abandoning a structure like this. Because the only reason it's there, you know, just because it's not being used anymore by the private property owner, that doesn't remove its duty. Because the only reason it's there is to benefit the property. And so you can't just create a hazard and then abandon it and say, well, I'm not using it anymore, so there's no more legal duty. In other words,
it's not grandfathered in because he didn't dig the hole.
That's true, too. And that's another related principle that the McQuillan Treatise and the cases we've cited talk about. It doesn't matter that it was created by a prior owner because, you know, under the law of property, you know, the hazards run with the property. And it's the action of maintaining that there once you have control of the building. That is what creates the legal duty or triggers the legal duty. And I think the cases we've cited, the Paget case from the Supreme Court of Minnesota, the Christie case, the Dodson case, all stand for this principle. And I would suggest the trial court did not refer to a case that contradicted that principle. Neither did the defendant find a case under these types of factual situations that contradicted that principle. So we're simply asking for the application of settled law and the rejection of the trial court's rationale that somehow this ordinance in 1968 either affected the law or extinguished the duty. Because this court has already recognized the exception under the common law.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Parsons. Mr. Wise, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Please, the court, counsel. Again, want to thank the court for the privilege of appearing in front of you and the opportunity to present my client's side of this case. There is one constant in this case, and that is, who owns the land where this subsurface existed or subspace existed? That is the city of Aberdeen. In the original plat, the street was dedicated. And this court has said the mere fact of dedication in a plat doesn't mean that the city accepts the responsibility unless there was some affirmative act of acceptance. And we pointed out that after the city received the plat and received the land, it then changed the names of the street. And I think under existing case law, that is enough to show an acceptance by the city. So the city accepted the street, which was, or the public right-of-way, which was described as 66 feet in width. Once it accepted that property, the city then, by ordinance, which also follows our state statute that sets up the scheme for sidewalks that the cities can then follow, fits hand in glove with what happened here. The state statute says the city can dictate the specifications of the sidewalk and the materials that are used for the sidewalk. And that's exactly what the city of Aberdeen did. It accepted the dedication. It then passed ordinances, and they have been constant since the turn of the 20th century, about 1897 on. And what they have said is the sidewalk in this area shall be 10 feet wide, including the curb. And it's 10 feet on the west side, and it's 10 feet on the east side. We hired an engineer who went out and did the drawing, and with today's measurements that we can get in within inches, it ended up that it was 10 feet and I think 6 inches or a few inches one side or the other. But the constant has been it's a sidewalk that is 10 feet in width. Now, shortly after the turn of the 20th century, I think in about 1906, the city said, you can open up the sidewalk to gain access to the basement of your adjoining property. So the city, as the owner of the property, gave the right to the abutting landowner, under certain conditions, to dig in to the sidewalk for access to the lower level of the adjoining property. The city, the owner, gave that privilege or right to the abutting landowner and then dictated how those openings would be handled. And it's clear that obviously as time went on, people were falling into these openings. And so the city then passed ordinances that said there has to be a steel guard around the opening. And because at night you might not be able to see it, you also have to have a light. Now, in 1954, the city says, enough. We don't want any more openings. We're revoking the right that we gave you to open the sidewalk so that you could gain access to your lower level. This was not an abandonment. It was a revocation of a privilege that the owner of the property gave the adjoining owner. Now, what did the city say? The city said, close up the openings, and you can do it in one of three ways. One of the three ways was to put a metal grate and put cement in the metal grate and cover that opening. That's what the owner of the property said, what we want you to do to revert this back to a sidewalk. We're not going to allow you to have this opening any longer. It was the city as the owner of the property who could have dictated, you must fill in the hole with dirt and cover it with cement. The city didn't say that. The city said, one of the ways you can convert this back to a sidewalk is to put it, a cement, and put the metal grate over the opening, which is what the preceding owners of this property did. Now, if that weren't enough, in 1968, the city passes a resolution that says all of the sidewalks within this area, and one of those areas was this particular sidewalk, shall be rebuilt, shall have Portland cement, shall meet the specifications and be done under the supervision of the city engineer. And at that point, the city came in and resumed the responsibility and the obligation that this court adopted in the Rapid City case and in the Zins case. And that is, the city has the responsibility for maintaining its sidewalk. The abutting landowner does not.
But Mr. Wise, if even after 1968, if this landowner had done some other kind of special use of the sidewalk, we wouldn't be here arguing, would we?
That is correct.
You would concede that there would be liability if a special use was made of the sidewalk after the 1968 ordinance.
And I think that's the way you reconcile this case, Judge. That is, if there is no opening, there is no duty. If there is an opening, then the abutting landowner is responsible for that opening. But what you have here then is the city revokes the abutting landowner's rights to have the access and the sidewalk. And then, as the judge Myron said, the city then assumed the responsibility, told the abutting landowner how to cover up that opening, and then reestablished it as a sidewalk. And under the subtle law of this state, once you have a sidewalk, it's the city's responsibility to maintain it. The abutting landowner doesn't. The abutting landowner's obligation ended when the city resumed its responsibility. If the city wanted to, it could have told the abutting landowner, when we revoke your right to have the access, you must now fill in the hole and cover it with cement. It didn't. It is a rule of law in this state. It's even cited in the appellant's brief that possession and control is the key on premises liability. Who had possession? The city. Who had control? The city. The city dictated what had to be done to cover up this opening. And it told you how it had to be covered up. It told you it had to be done under our supervision, and it had to be done with the approval of the city engineer. If that isn't possession, if that isn't control, I don't know what it is. The other thing that also was lost in the facts here is that directly across the street sits City Hall. I mean, directly across the street from this sidewalk is City Hall with its city engineers and the obligation of the statutes of this state that dictate the city is responsible for the inspection and maintenance of its sidewalks. And it didn't. And the trial court was highly critical of the city of Aberdeen and specifically said, you sued the wrong party. You should have sued the owner of the property, the party that was responsible for maintaining it, the party that had the statutory obligation to maintain it.
Doesn't that go to causation rather than duty, though? If the city was negligent in some respect in failing to maintain or watch or take care of the covering?
I would agree. Whether or not they were negligent in the maintenance of it is the same thing that would happen if you reversed and sent the case back to me or sent it back to the trial court, is whether my client was negligent. But what we're talking about here is the duty. Who has the duty? And this court has said the owner, the person in control and possession, has the duty. And this court has also said that the abutting landowner does not have a duty when it comes to a sidewalk. And that's also what Judge Myron said. It's the same as if I walk out and I see my neighbor's got a problem. I don't have a duty to correct that problem. That's the owner who has that problem. Me, as an adjoining landowner, I don't have that obligation. I don't have that duty. I do want to talk about the Dobson case and the Paget case. The Paget case is a Minnesota Supreme Court decision. And there, the court said, abandonment doesn't release the abutting landowner. And I agree with that. But this wasn't abandonment in this case. This was the owner, the city of Aberdeen, telling the adjoining landowner, you can no longer use it for the purpose that I initially gave you. I'm revoking that and restore it. And to restore it under the city's scheme was to put a grade over. And then in 1968, the city comes in and says, rebuild the sidewalk and do it under our supervision and do it in compliance with our ordinances. It's not the same as Paget.
The ordinance on repaving, that wasn't specific to property owners that maintain vaults or openings, though. Wasn't that a general repaving ordinance?
That's why my point is, Judge, it's a sidewalk. It's been a sidewalk since it was originally platted and the city set out the specifications for the sidewalk and said it shall be 10 feet wide, including the curb, and the curb was 6 inches. And then it said, we'll allow you to dig in there, but then you're responsible. And then they came back and said, in 54, you've got to cover it. In 68, they come in and they tell you that you've got to rebuild these sidewalks, and this particular area was included in that resolution. And if you rebuild the sidewalk, it has to be done with our specifications, in accordance with our ordinances, and under the supervision and direction of our engineer.
I find your focus interesting, because if you call it a sidewalk, we decide this case one way. If you call this case a excavation, we probably decide the case the other way.
And see, that's why I said, Judge, you got to look at this. If there is no excavation or artificial condition, it's the city's responsibility. If there is an excavation or an artificial condition that's being used, or even if you want to accept their argument, abandoned, it's the abutting landowners. But once the city says you can no longer have that excavation, you can no longer use that artificial condition, and then takes the responsibility of not only telling you it's no longer, you can no longer use it, but tells you how you've got to restore it. How is that not putting it back to a sidewalk?
Mr. Wise, there's a statute, and I think it's 1126, and it says, lists what constitutes the laws of South Dakota, like the Constitution, and it says the common law, unless abrogated by statute. Are you trying to abrogate it by a city ordinance?
No, I'm not. I think the city ordinance, I think the statute, and I think the common law are all the same in this case. And that is that the city has the duty and the responsibility of maintaining its sidewalks. And it was reverted, it went back to a sidewalk. Now, whose fault is it that the hole wasn't filled in? I submit to you it's the owner of the property, the city. If the city had wanted to say you can no longer use it, and you've got to convert it back to a sidewalk, they could have said fill in the hole, but they chose the option of telling the abutting landowner, cover it with a grate. And then in 68 comes along, says rebuild your sidewalk. The city had to have notice of what the condition was. The city then assumed the responsibility. I mean, if you look at the photographs, is it not a sidewalk? Is it not a public way? And wasn't that what it was dedicated for when the original plat was filed with the Register of Deeds office?
Let me ask you a loaded question. Was Mr. Gelhaus maintaining a subspace?
No. As Mr. Parsons pointed out, there was openings, windows and doors that had the openings. And a tremendous amount of heat was escaping through those openings. And so Mr. Gelhaus put cement blocks in and covered up the windows. The door was still there, but there was no use made of it at all.
So you're saying it's not his subspace?
I don't want to get into that argument, because then they're going to say he abandoned it. We didn't abandon anything. The city revoked the right it gave the adjoining landowner to use its sidewalk. I mean, there's no doubt about it. That's what the city did in 1954. We are no longer going to allow openings in our sidewalks. And you have to cover them now and put them back to what they were before. Now, whose fault was it that the city didn't say, fill in the openings? It was the owner, the city, who made the decision as to how those openings were to be restored. It was the city who did that. My client and his predecessors did not abandon the property or the right. The city took that right away. And that's what Rapid City stands for. That's what Zen stands for, is the city is responsible and has the duty to maintain its sidewalks.
In taking a step, half a step further on filling in the side or the excavation, who would be responsible? Would it be the adjoining property owner or the city to make sure the wall didn't fall in? You can't just dump materials into that hole. Whose responsibility is that? The city or the owner?
The statute says the city has the right to set the specifications and the materials that are to be used. The city could have said, we are revoking that right, and here's how you're going to convert it or revert it back to the sidewalk. It was the city who chose how the sidewalk would be restored. It was restored to a sidewalk. Once it was restored to a sidewalk, it became the city's duty. And that's what Judge Myron said.
Wouldn't it be the adjoining property owner's benefit that they didn't have to reinforce that wall to withstand the pressure of dirt or concrete or whatever being dumped into that space?
I would submit to you that when it was originally built, it was built to withstand it. And it was only opened later to allow the access in. They wouldn't have been allowed to get access.
We're both speculating on
that's
that.
That's true. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I don't see it as a benefit to the owner. I think the privilege was given to allow the use of another person's property, the city's property. And the city then took that away. And then the city, as the owner, said, here's how you're going to restore it. How can the duty follow or flow to the abutting landowner to do other than what the owner of the property tells it has to do to restore the property? And then if you look at the Rapid City case, it's an indemnity claim. If you look at the Paget case, it's an indemnity claim. What happened was the injured party sued the city. And then the city, in turn, in the Rapid City case and in the Paget case, sues the abutting landowner. And that's what this court has also said. And that's what our statutes also say, is that the city is the primary liable and responsible party. And then if you do something, the city may have a claim against the abutting landowner. And in this case, and as in Paget, in the Rapid City case, it was Gurney who sued the city and got the verdict and got the decision in 1951. And it wasn't until 1961 that this court said that the city then had the right to go after the adjoining landowner, the bank. And it was deteriorated sidewalk. There are two other cases that are cited in Pageant that are worth noting, the Southworth case and the Bonnewell case. The Southworth case was cited for the abandonment statement. And there the court said that they had to restore to the original condition to avoid liability and that the city could therefore recover against the abutter. I submit to you that in this case, where the city dictated how the property was to be, or the sidewalk was to be restored, that the city then assumed that responsibility and that was the option that was given to the preceding owners of this property.
Your time has expired, I'm Mr. Sorry. Wise. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Parsons, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. The city's argument in this case, I think it's been almost conceded, is a semantic one. And the city wants to call this a sidewalk. And when Justice Zinner inquired about whether Mr. Gelhaus was maintaining an excavation, Mr. Wise's response was, I don't want to get into that, because then you'll just say he abandoned it. The facts in this case are that Mr. Gelhaus maintained a subspace that was created for the benefit of his property. He maintained it. He kept it. He knew about it. He had a door that opened out into it. He would walk in there and look up. He maintained that for connected to his building. And that is precisely the exception that this court recognized in the Rapid City and Zenz cases. There's no dispute about what the law is concerning notice to abutting landowners and the fact that they don't normally have liability concerning sidewalks. That's the law we've been citing. But the Rapid City case specifically addressed this exact exception in consideration of the same statutory scheme and, coincidentally, the same ordinance, same resolution passed by a city, and said there's an exception that we recognize consistent with these other jurisdictions that says where a subspace is maintained underneath the municipal sidewalk by a landowner, the abutting, and it was put there, and the only reason it exists is to benefit the original property. Under that exception, there is a legal duty to use ordinary care in maintaining that subspace. And in the Paget case and in these other cases we've cited in the McQuillan Treatise, that duty has been recognized. And the we have this semantic theory, say, now call it a sidewalk, ignore the subspace. Since it's only a sidewalk and we're pretending the subspace isn't there, municipalities have duties for sidewalks, and there's no excavation because there's a grate. And that falls under any logical scrutiny. And that's why there's no case, not a single case, that the defendant could find to support its theory that somehow ordinances or resolutions extinguish a legal duty that's been recognized under the common law and reaffirmed by this court. Not a single case for the argument that somehow in saying in 1968 you have to put grates over openings dissolves or extinguishes or removes or negates an abutting landowner's legal duty under this court's settled precedent to use ordinary care in maintaining excavations. The excavation's still there. It always has been there, and closing your eyes to it is what caused this injury. So I would respectfully suggest that this court should not overrule Rapid City or Zenz. This is the law that municipalities have been relying upon for decades. And that let the jury determine whether or not Mr. Gelhaus was negligent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parsons. The court will be in recess until 10 o'clock.